Oh, man.
I spelled Zendikar wrong.
I noticed. I wasn't going to say anything. But you definitely left out a K. Zendiar sounds like
Zendiar. That's the next set.
Zendiar sounds like something out of like a really, really bad low-budget sci-fi movie. Oh, the planet Zendiar.
So, potential future magic set is what I'm hearing?
Eventually. It's going to be a secret lair from Zendiar. It's just all cards from Zendikar, but with no K's in them. And after that, they'll go to,
Lotus
they'll go to Amagawa.
Oh, God.
Followed by Tar Heel.
I can't think of any K names off the top. This is good.
Oh, yeah. Just got them all.
Ioria?
Oh, Ioria. Ioria. Really nice, that's going to be a good
one. With Zendiar? That's the boon.
Welcome to episode number 56 of The Memory Jar. As always, we are here to remember the cards, the decks, the people, and the stories that make Magic the game we love. I'm David Presswood, and with me is my co-host, Christian Wright. Christian, it has been a while. How are you doing, buddy?
It's been a minute. It's been a lot. And is it December 28th yet?
Of what year? Yeah, listeners... You know, we apologize like everyone else during this time. We have gone through a lot this past spring and summer. I mean, I think all of us have. So we wanted to discuss that a little bit today. And then catch up on Core Set 2021 and Zendikar Rising, which we have basically missed. And then talk about what's in store for the future.
Yes, we've missed you all, and we've missed Magic in general. So we're really excited to jump back in and talk about serious topics, like Secret Reach creatures and fun cards in Zendikar Rising. But first, like we always do, let's crack open the Memory Jar.
All right, so our random card, this is perfect Memory Jar style in that it's obscure enough and it gives us a lot to talk about. This is Rushing Tide Zubera. So this is an uncommon from Saviors of Kamigawa. It's 2BB for a 3/3. It is a creature Zubera spirit. And it says, when Rushing Tide Zubera is put into a graveyard from play, if 4 or more damage was dealt with this turn, draw 3 cards. So that's kind of a lot for your Ancestral Recall there.
I was just going to say, it's like you're paying 2BB for a fog that draws you 3 cards. Like, that's actually pretty good.
Yeah, if they have a big creature, I mean, nobody's attacking their 5/5 into this and letting you draw 3 cards, right?
No.
So, as I recall, there was a full cycle of Zubera in Champions of Kamigawa, and then this one, and just a red one in Saviors. So, if you're drafting full block, you probably couldn't do it, but... Was there a Zubera deck in Triple Champions draft? I know you were playing then.
I didn't do a lot of Champions drafts. I think it was possible. There are certain Zuberas that are better than others.
Sure.
The blue one drew you cards for every Zubera that died, and the red one dealt damage. So those were the two best ones to build around. I think the black one discarded, the white one gained life, and the green one, we don't talk about the green one. But, yeah, I mean, it was doable. I think the problem was that Triple Champions was pretty fun, but it had a meme deck.
Mm-hmm.
And the meme deck was the Dampened Thought deck that was actually just really good. And so people figured that out pretty early, and then they didn't really, like, that was what people were either forcing, or they were doing, like, Samurai, because there was a white, you know, there's a beatdown deck that you can do. And Champions was, like, the last set I sort of played, and then I kind of tapped out for about a year. Sure. So... not much of an authority on this, to be honest.
Well, maybe if we get a full Kamigawa block flashback draft sometime, where it's the original order, because that was back when it was the oldest set first, right? Big set, small set, small set. So it would have been Champions, a pack of Champions, followed by Betrayers, followed by Saviors. So I'll draft all the blue and red Zubera I can in pack 1, and then in pack 3 in Saviors, try to get my Rushing Tide and whatever other Zubera that one was.
Do you know what helps that deck a lot that's in Betrayers?
I don't.
Umezawa's Jitte. Just draft
Umezawa's Jitte. Oh, okay, yeah. I mean, I feel like that helps every limited deck out.
Well, so, yeah.
Okay, all right. Yeah, good. So I'll draft all of the Zubera and then, you know, a couple of those if I can get them.
Yeah, you'll be good. You'll be good. So, I would like to try a meme modern deck.
Mm-hmm.
I think there might even be a Saffron Olive video about this, but it's just Mono Zubera. and you play like Rally of the Ancestors. And the other white return one that was in a core set with Gideon in the art, whose name is escaping me.
Okay.
And had Convoke.
Sure. Yeah. Because all the champion Zubera were just two mana. They were one and then a mana of that color.
And they all had graveyard triggers. So the idea was you would sacrifice them.
Okay. I can see that.
Yeah. The problem is you're playing at minimum 20 copies of creatures that don't do
a just don't. A lot of one-twos, just ready to go.
A lot of one-twos.
All right, maybe not. If anybody wants to see some H.R. Giger-style alien art, check out Rushing Tide Zubera from Saviors of Kamigawa. All right, well, let's get into one of our main topics. What's up, man? What's been up with you?
Oh, God. Basically, the biggest thing, I lost a job, and that was right before we did our preview recording for Primal Might.
Yep.
And it's just been pretty rough. It's a full-time job to be looking for a job.
Yeah.
And I'm lucky. I got a new job. Started a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So that's been positive. But it's just been rough. And it also doesn't help being in a, 600-square-foot studio by yourself. So I've moved in with my girlfriend. That's helped my mental health a ton. It's just been rough.
Yeah. I mean, I feel for you and I hear that. And I think we're all going through this kind of stuff. There's been a lot of turmoil this year. You know, COVID really kicked everybody pretty hard. We had recorded our episode with Shivam Bhatt one day before the national emergency was declared. And so that would have been March 12th. And then we released that episode. We took a couple weeks off as everybody was kind of adjusting to quarantine. We recorded our Ikoria Facts episode. And then, as you mentioned, the last one we recorded was our Primal Might preview with Eli Loveman when he brought us a preview card. And just what a year from there. You know, I have kept my job. It has changed a lot. And for a long time, I was working more hours and more intensely during those hours. You know, the biggest thing for me is I just moved because I got divorced or am still getting divorced. That's a long process, I gotta tell you. It's it's just kind of one and done. And it's like, no, it just drags on and on. So, you know, I've been battling through custody and selling a place and, you know, dividing stuff. And it's taken a ton of time and a ton of mental energy, obviously, to work through all that. So not fully resolved, but now that I'm in my own place and, comfortable, I feel like we can kind of get back to a recording schedule. And I'm interested in just talking about stuff that's fun, right? Yeah. Lighter stuff. Magic for us. And for people like us, and for most of the people who I think are listening, is a hobby. It's not as serious. It doesn't have to be as serious. Even people who play very seriously also know how to just, you know, kick back and have a good time with it. So, you know, that's what we're bringing, and I'm happy we get to get back to it.
We're very lucky. One of the things that I kept thinking about while I was unemployed is there's a lot of people unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
I had a ton of interviews.
Yep.
I am very lucky in that I sold my soul and I'm in an industry that has not suffered due to COVID.
Right.
And I'm lucky that I can spend money on Magic cards, and I'm lucky that I can spend time just playing this game, because it's kind of a lot of stuff in the past couple weeks have kind of thrown the focus that this is not just a hobby. It's a kind of a luxury hobby, right?
Absolutely. Like,
I don't know how much my collection's worth, but I mean, I've left valuable Magic card just sitting on my desk for months on end, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've destroyed cards that were $30 at the time by accident. You know, it's just like, it just kind of makes you realize how lucky we are, but also that this is like, we get worked up a battle. I'm going to throw in my one swear word that I'm not going to censor for a podcast, you know, even though we're a family-friendly podcast, but it's just, there's a lot of bullshit that's involved, right? That we just argue about a lot of stuff that doesn't matter.
That's true. I think it's important to recognize, our privilege in the game and in the community. You know, a lot of that is certainly financial and a lot of that is based on time. But, you know, we are very enfranchised and we get to interact with the game in a way that is purely at our leisure.
Yeah.
You know, I hope for the sake of our listeners that, you know, most of y'all are in the same place.
It's made me evaluate post-Magic in general how I want to spend my time.
Yeah,
and it's something that I used to go every Friday. That was the thing I did. I would go down and play F&M because, you know, you could go watch a movie or get dinner with friends, but that's a lot more expensive than going to play Magic. Well, Theoretically. But I was starting to really kind of waver pre-COVID, but now post-COVID, it's like, what's important? And Magic is a hobby, right? But it's not the most important thing in my life. Like, it's not the end of the world if I never get 4 underground C, right, to be able to play Legacy. It's not the end of the world if I can't make it to a tournament, right?
Sure.
Like, I used to be disappointed. There's a time where I'd be really disappointed if I was going to miss a major tournament, and I would be a little resentful. But now it's like, I'm going to carve time how I want to carve time with people. And it's that reevaluation, right? Yeah, so part of this thinking and this kind of segues into our next segment about our, you know, before we get to the fun part about talking about Secret Reach creatures. What's your relationship with Magic been in COVID? Like, what have you been playing? How have you been playing?
Well, I think like a lot of people, I've snuggled up pretty closely to Magic Arena. I have drafted a lot, so much so that, you know, I have complete sets of a couple of the most recent sets. I played a little bit of webcam Magic here and there, a little EDH, the odd pre-release, and you and I just recently played a little webcam Modern, which was great. So get a little more of that tighter social aspect. And then I've also been working on a cube. I've been working on the Pioneer Commander cube that I've been thinking about for a long time, that's designed to be 4-player drafted and played, you know, Commander decks, but only cards that are Pioneer legal. So hopefully I will get to play that in person someday.
Oh, yeah. I have not been as active. I've only played mainly Arena. I've recently done webcam EDH because I was A, skeptical, and B, I just didn't have the cards on me to just hop on a game. We don't obviously record video, listeners, so I'm going to point David to, I finally bought like my hook over, so now I can I don't have to worry about going back and forth to my apartment to play. But yeah, I've done a pre-release. You know, I did the Ikoria pre-release, and I did the Zendikar Rising pre-release. And,
yeah, we battled our pre-release decks against each other on the webcam. It was great.
Yeah, it was great. But it's a lot different. Like, I really do miss being able to go into my local game store and just hop into a Commander pod or be excited to do Friday Night Magic. As much as I just talked about a lot about how I maybe shouldn't be doing that anymore, I severely miss the gathering.
Yeah, I miss it. I look forward to eventually going back to drafts at my local store when I can. You know, it's not a must-make-it thing, but I think it's critical. You know, I've been spending a lot of my time that maybe I would be doing Magic stuff playing some other social games with friends, whether they're Fall Guys or Among Us, or, you know, I've been playing on, you know, a couple different Xbox games with friends who I haven't seen in a while, and I think everybody has kind of rallied around some of those things as well.
Yeah, and I'm in the same boat. I finally played my first single player game in a long time, and that was Hades, which I'll recommend. That game's fun as hell.
Excellent. Excellent game. Yeah,
excellent game. But yeah, my social outlet has been through games. Thankfully, I'm very lucky. Like, I will say, my girlfriend, her friends weren't organized around that. There wasn't a natural outlet where they, like, you know, they didn't like throw axes, or, you know, they you know, they all talked and they hung out, they'd go to bars and stuff, which is something I also miss. I do feel lucky having played games, not necessarily calling myself a gamer, but having games as a backdrop, because it's been a little easier to be like, oh, I have stuff to do with my friends. We're not just figuring out Zoom, and then, you know, 3 hours later and 15 beers later, you're like, oh my God.
So first of all, you're a gamer. I'm a gamer. We're all gamers. Lean into it. It's great. Secondly, I've found my entire life, whether it's board games or Magic or video games or playing in a bocce league or beer league softball, that having a game that you can use to organize around and then you converse and catch up while you're playing it is just a great way to go about things. And so, you know, I'm glad to be able to do that, and I'm looking forward to doing it in person.
I will say the one thing that I have completely gone off of is trying to grind, whether it's a GP grind, whether it's a competitive grind. I just don't have the patience for that anymore. And that's been the biggest lesson I've kind of figured out about myself.
I think part of that is that the Arena grind is just different, right? It's not going to the occasional PPTQ. It's you need to be playing some amount of hours and rank your way up and rank your way up and rank your way up. And, you know, I enjoyed playing in PPTQs. I enjoyed playing at Grand Prix, but I don't need to make Mythic. It takes so much time for minimum reward. And the things magic has been doing are not conducive to attracting me to wanting to spend all of that time. You know, the power level, you've said this to me many times, is just off the charts, yeah. right? There are a lot of cool cards in Standard right now. We'll talk about some of those, like all the reprints in Core 2021, and they're just not seeing play because everything else is too powerful. And
yeah.
I think there's some uncertainty about, is this what we're going to be doing for the foreseeable future? And that doesn't motivate me.
I think it's telling. So I built a new Modern deck. We played Modern. And my deck was basically 2019-2020 cards
mm-hmm.
with Path to Exile and Fetchlands. Oh, and Cryptic Command. I'm sorry. I can't forget the Cryptic Command. But it was just dumb. I had fun. You know, you can go to a I never had a problem with going to a tournament and playing like Hogak or Oko, because I knew I didn't have any chances to play this. But it's also not the goal to have fun at these tournaments. The goal is to win, right?
Right.
Having to you stare at that reality where, like, you if you want to win, you have to play this stupid broken card and you have to play at least 4 or 5 hours a day. It's just like that's soul draining. Like, I had weeks where I just didn't touch Arena. Like, I just wouldn't open it. It's not easy to dick around in Arena. And it's not easy to... These are platforms that are set up to take your money, to play as much efficient magic as possible, and call it a day.
And I get that. And, you know, I get that Wizards has to make money, too. But there are some tweaks. Like, I loved that Jumpstart was on Arena. I played a bunch of matches of Jumpstart. I thought it was fun. I appreciated that I could export my Jumpstart decks and direct challenge my friends. But, you know, then I hit my deck limit in Arena, because you can only have a certain number of decks. And there's no way to delete those. And then, you know, there's no format where I can generate decks based on the Jumpstart decks I've already purchased and then battle them yeah. with people. So that's a good example of you have to go out of the way to make your own casual fun where you're connecting with your friends. And we don't just have that. So that being said, you've talked about redefining your relationship with Magic. How are you planning to interact with Magic going forward?
I mean, until we can safely go back to stores and such, I'm going to be playing a lot more webcam Magic.
That's like, great.
I'm going to make it a priority to do at least one or two games a week, if I can. And granted, with work, that might not be possible. But like, the primary focus is webcam EDH or playing with, as you know, picking up Spell Table and just doing, you know, playing games of Legacy with friends or just playing Modern. Like, you know, it's a great platform. You don't need four people to be on it at the same time. That's about it. I mean, I'll plan a cube, but it just, you know, I guess I have a lot of time to plan my first cube, and we can work on that together. Mm-hmm. That'd be fun. And the podcast, obviously, that's the most important thing. But I just have to remember that I don't have to jump on Arena.
Right.
Like, get my quests done, I guess, because that's just free gold you're leaving on the table. But that's like maybe at most 20 minutes of gaming, and then I'm done. And then I don't have to touch it for 3 days, right? So.
Yeah, my favorite parts of my relationship with Magic are all the social parts, which absolutely includes this podcast. We're on the same page there. It includes normally time spent at my local store, which obviously isn't happening right now. But I hope to do that again someday. If we never get big Magic events back, then it is what it is, man. I mean, I love to see my friends from all over, but that's not the core of the game for me, is going to, you know, Richmond or DC or whatever. I, you know, I want to go and I see you and other friends, but there are other ways to do that. And now that we have this infrastructure set up and we can do webcam Magic or more easily communicate, I mean, everybody's got a Zoom account now, so, you know, we'll figure it out from there.
Right. I do miss, like, an open. Not a large Grand Prix hall, right? Where you're, you know, you're walking 5 miles a day going back sure. and forth in the hall. But I just do miss, like, having more than 50 people in a room and playing Magic, right? Like, and honestly, I don't think we're going to get Magic Fests ever again. I just don't think that's going to happen. I think if Star City really wants to restart the Open Series, I think they're going to, but I just don't see a future where they have convention level Magic anymore.
I think that's a healthy way to look at it. Say maybe, you know, don't expect anything in 2021, maybe 2022. If you do get something at all, it'll be a bonus. But you know, like I said, it is what it is. We're just going to kind of live with that and see where it goes. I will say one nice bonus of not going to these larger local tournaments. You know, there are always a couple people in the community who just kind of bug you or are obnoxious. And I haven't seen any of those people in like 6 months. It's been wonderful. All right, well, let's catch up on what we do best in this podcast. We didn't get to do full facts shows for Core 2021 or Zendikar Rising. And we've already talked a lot. We're not going to do a double show here. But we do want to hit the high notes. So let's do Core 2021 and Zendikar Rising facts, the abridged version.
And when we say abridged, we're cutting out some of these sections of the podcast that we spent a lot of time going over.
So much time.
So, listeners, if you like the fact that we have it slightly abridged, please give us some feedback, because I'm not going to lie, we would spend about 5 hours going over forced obsolescence stuff, and we'd go back and forth and argue about, like, is this really forced obsolescence? No. Well, but, like, there's a functional... So, just provide us our feedback if you miss those. If we do, we'll go and have those arguments again, but otherwise I'm... all in favor of KOing that one.
I feel like you just kind of subtweeted me for being right all the time about forced obsolescence.
It's not that you're right. I agree that you're right. It's just, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
Backwards.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
We would have to, like, think of inventive scryfall searches to figure out and suss out some of these cards.
Yeah, I like solving a problem and coming up with, you know, crazy solutions as much as the next person, but that was a lot. We'll probably get back to it for call time in January.
Yeah, we'll call time will be interesting. But yeah, we're taking a break on that one on purpose.
So, Core Set 2021 came out earlier this summer. Generally, fun set to draft.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fairly deep. You could do some, you know, five color nonsense with shrines. You could do some nearly monocolor decks, and you know, you had a lot of options. But why don't we talk about shrines for a sec?
Yeah, shrines. So the original set of shrines came out, funny enough, speaking of Zuberas, it was part of another cycle in Champions Kamigawa, and they were fan favorites. They were enchantments that had a special type, so it was enchantment shrine, and they had beginning of upkeep effects. Mm-hmm. That scaled depending on how many shrines you controlled. So they were legendary enchantments, which is a key detail I forgot to mention. So you couldn't have, like, five of the red shrine and then go nuts. You can only have one of each. And if you had all five, they did some ridiculously crazy stuff. But otherwise, they're fine on their own. You probably want at least two or three of them in play. But yeah, they were a fan favorite, and people kept clamoring, we're going to see more shrines, we're going to see more shrines, and they bought them back for this core set.
Yeah, as you mentioned, the original ones triggered during your upkeep. The difference is the new ones, the ones that had triggers at least, did trigger at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase. And so, Yes. You know, an interesting but extremely relevant difference. And I'm sure, I have not done this, but a lot of people have, you know, built five-color shrine EDH decks now that there are... more available, including Sanctum of All, the five-color shrine that tutors for shrines and doubles their triggers. So, seems pretty wild.
Yes. And the twist on this one is two of the shrines have activated abilities,
right.
Which is it's actually a very... I like it. I like that as a twist. And it opens up the design space, so if they do more of them in the future, they can have different types of shrines.
Yeah, now that they're not tied to Kamigawa, it seems pretty open. You know, the big news for me is mill is a keyword. Love it.
Finally.
Yeah, finally. Already reprinting old cards with mill, you know, target player mills two cards. Great. You know, a simple change that just makes it a little more clear for everybody. And, you know, it's got reminder text, so it's not like new players are going to be left out in the cold on that one.
It took them 26 years. What's up with that?
I don't know, man. What? Millstone was an alpha. We've been calling it that forever.
Well, fear was an alpha, and they made that a keyword in the early aughts.
True.
I'm just saying.
All right, well, we're here. So. Hopefully it won't go away like fear did.
Yes.
And then phasing is back, kind of. Other than Teferi's Protection, which was not a standard legal card, we haven't seen phasing. And then Teferi, Master of Time, has a phasing ability. It can phase out a permanent, which is awesome. And personally, I think the kind of thing a mythic should do where... yeah, it's complex, but you're not going to see it very often. So just put it on this one card, explain what it is, and it's fine.
They actually also made the functionality a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm.
The rules, I think they might have also changed. They edited the rules to make it simpler. because equipment was, if I remember correctly, was the made it weird. But I think they just kind of tucked it in and said whatever's attached to it phases out, phases in, if I remember correctly. But it, with that fix, I actually really like it. And it does, I think it actually expands the color by. It gives blue pseudo removal that isn't just the minus X minus O cards. I think I wouldn't mind seeing it expanded in future core sets. I don't know if it could make a whole block mechanic, but if it's like, you know, every core set you have one or two phasing cards,
sure,
I think that'd be fine.
Yeah, it doesn't feel that much different than Bounce. It's probably not as good as Bounce, so, you know, you can just put it on something and, you know, phase out your opponent's stuff. That seems fine.
Yeah.
A couple pieces of trivia, as long as we're here. So Spark Hunter Masticore, a throwback to many old Masticores where you had to discard a card when casting the spell. That's enough trivia, but this is also the first card with protection from Planeswalkers. Never seen that before.
No, it's... Well, how long has it taken them? When was Lorwyn? 2000, 2007? Am I hearing this right? 13 years? Okay, got it.
Yeah, protection from Planeswalkers. Teferi will not be phasing out Spark Hunter Masticore. And then my other trivia, do you know what's unique about Garruk's Gorehorn?
It's a green vanilla creature. They haven't done that one.
There are plenty of green vanilla creatures.
That's news to me.
There are also plenty of 7/3s out there. The interesting thing is the showcase version of Garruk's Gorehorn has a completely empty text box. And I believe that has never happened before on a Magic card.
That's pretty
No cool. abilities, no flavor text, no nothing.
Yeah. No, that's... we'll have to do some more research on that. I believe you.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about... No, no, the Future Sight stuff had flavor text on them. Yep.
Yeah, all I know is that the first time I opened one of the Showcase Garruk's Gorehorns, I knew it looked weird. And that is why. It's just a big blank text box for no reason.
So what's really cool about this, speaking of cool little trivia, there are a lot of cool signature reprints in Core 2021. Core sets are the perfect time to bring reprints, right? They're not. There's no thematic glue. You don't have to worry about if it's set in a certain place or not. They just kind of make it up as they go along and allows them to put anything they want. So we got a lot of there's like a lot of cool reprints top to bottom. We're not going to focus on all of them because we'd be here all day. Like half the set's reprints. We're just going to focus on some of the really cool signature reprints that we haven't seen in a while or really like we're just really happy they reprinted them.
Yeah, I just want to double down on what you said. What a great use of a core set. Like they're reprinting powerful cards that are hits with casual or commander players, and they printed a bunch of alternate art borderless versions of some of the most popular.
Yes.
For example, Ugin the Spirit Dragon, originally from Fate Reforged. Grim Tutor. We finally got a version of Grim Tutor. The original one was from Starter 1999, I believe. And this
got
was
that
like a
star.
$300 card. Yeah, it had the little star on it. Massacre Worm was a nice reprint. Even Cultivate, which had been a common previously. You know, they printed it here at Uncommon and did this great alternate art version. Scavenging Ooze got one. Solemn Simulacrum, Commander Favorite. And also Containment Priest. And that one's interesting because it was originally printed in a Commander set. Commander 2014, I believe. But it's a card that is totally fine in Standard. It's just one and a white for a 2/2 flash. It's a human cleric, so we'll talk about Party and Zendikar. Get your Containment Priest in the deck. It says if a non-token creature would enter the battlefield and it wasn't cast, you exile it instead. So it's just a way to, you know, stop graveyard shenanigans or, you know, putting things into play for free shenanigans. Which, you know, reasonable commander card.
Yeah.
Doesn't blow up Standard. Why not?
Well, and it's funny because there was a concern that it was too good in for Standard because this was a Legacy staple for a while, thanks to some of the Legacy decks before they printed Oko.
Yeah.
But because of the reprints, you know, I had two and I paid a bit of money for the second one and now it's a less than it's bulk basically, but it's pretty perfect.
Yeah, you know, some other reprints, Baneslayer Angel, you know,
good.
not good. You mean not good enough for Standard?
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, a 5-mana 5/5 flying first strike lifelink protection from demons and dragons, not good enough for Standard because that's where we are power level wise. If it does not do anything when it enters the battlefield, you are in trouble. We got Glorious Anthem, the card for which Anthem effects are named. One white, white enchantment for creatures you control get +1/+1.
Baneslayer is one of these, and so is Glorious Anthem. They used to reprint... Like, Baneslayer was printed in two core sets in a row. But Glorious Anthem was in the same boat. This was printed first in Urza Saga. They printed it in a bunch of core sets. And the idea was, this is like your standard white effect. It's not backbreaking. It's kind of part of the identity of white. And honestly, some of these cards I really miss. Like, Baneslayer Angel could have came back. So could have Glorious Anthem. Like, these are really cornerstone effects of standard that I think, when you don't have them, you don't realize how much you miss them. Right?
Right. Couple other cards. Azusa, Lost But Seeking. Amazing, in which we're in a standard format that cares about playing as many lands as possible and ramping basically nonstop, which we'll talk about, but, you know, not really a standard playable card, but was very expensive and now inexpensive for people for Commander. Heroic Intervention is another one that had gotten fairly expensive from Aether Revolt, but, you know, one in a green for an instant, permanents you control gain hexproof and indestructible until end of turn. Commander staple.
$20 before they reprinted it.
Yeah.
Like, no joke.
Yep.
I remember before Court Set 2021, I told my friends, if you have Heroic Inventions, sell them, because they are randomly expensive.
Yeah.
So it was much needed.
Yeah. So lots of great, interesting reprints. Interestingly, none of these cards are the ones that blew up Standard. It was all the new stuff with the push power level. I mean, certainly you saw Ugin and Scavenging Ooze and Cultivate in a lot of these decks, but, you know, these cards have not been the problem.
Well, and it's funny because Ugin was kind of the payoff card for some of these ramp decks, especially pre-rotation, right? Like, it was so good, you could just exile the board and it was a very powerful effect. And now, a lot of decks aren't even playing that as the end game result because it's too slow and it doesn't do enough.
Right.
Like, which is wild. Like, that is one of the objectively best planeswalkers they've ever created. And it's just not played. It's just, it's amazing.
I played a few matches of Arena today. Mm-hmm. And I played against Ugin in three of my matches, in which my opponent played and landed an Ugin, and I still won the game.
Yeah.
So that shows you where power level is at right now.
Yeah.
Brief creature type update. Hounds or dogs? Who let the dogs out? Wizards did.
Wizards did.
Woof, 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 woof. Yes.
A lot of good boys.
Yeah.
A lot of good boys.
Really, really pleased with that change. We had cats and hounds just didn't make sense, so now we have dogs. Secret Reach card of the set, Christian.
Well, I think there's only one choice. It's Turret Ogre, right?
Yeah, Turret Ogre was like the OG from War of the Spark that inspired this category in the first place. Turret Ogre ate more small flyers than any card possibly in the history of Limited.
In case you forgot what Turret Ogre does, it's 3 and a red for a 4/3 Ogre Warrior. Has Reach! Who would have thought?
It does.
Who would have thought? And when it entered the battlefield, if you controlled another creature with power 4 or greater, it deals 2 damage to each opponent. That is the trinket text in this card.
Yeah, not the reach. It's wild. You just don't think of a red 4/3 as being a card with reach. So
no one else did.
No, and I saw people, and I got people. I didn't play this card a lot, but I got plenty of people where they just attack into it. And I'm like, how do they not know? This is the second time it's been a secret reach card. Best tongue twister? So I will submit 2 Faith's Fetters. Is surprisingly difficult to say. And also, I think the winner for me is Malefic Scythe, which doesn't sound that hard.
Malefic Scythe?
Malefic Scythe.
Yeah, it's the one in a black equipment, and a creature dies, you put a counter on it, and creatures get +1/+0 for each counter on it.
Yeah, card was great. See, I tie 5 times fast.
Malefic Scythe. Malefic Scythe. Malefic Scythe. Malefic Scythe. Malefic Scythe.
Oh, that was very good. Can you do Faith's Fetters?
Faith's Fetters. Faith's Fetters.
Excuse me. Okay, so maybe it's Faith's Fetters. Christian votes Faith's Fetters. Vote Malefic Scythe.
So what are your speaking of tongue twisters, what are your favorite commons and uncommons and rares for Core Set 2021?
So my favorite common is Drowsing Pteranodon. I am generally in for a 2-mana 3/3 defender. I have a leak in my game, and it is a love for those cards. But this is also a combo card. You know, if you control a creature with power 4 or greater, it can attack as though it didn't have defender. A lot of times that means putting a counter or an enchantment on the Pteranodon. I just loved this card in Limited. Loved it, loved it, loved it. And part of this is probably because I feel like I was on Drowsy Pteranodon being the best green common in the set before the rest of the world. And so, you know, I would draft decks with 4 or 5 of them and go to town. How about you? What's your common?
My common is Alpine Watchdog.
Aww.
Because they're good dogs, Brent. They're good dogs.
They are all good dogs. I played a lot of Alpine Watchdogs in Limited in, especially in white red decks, with like I would snap up Alpine Houndmasters and just get as many of these as I could. And very similar to Drowsing Pteranodon, you put a counter or a short sword on this thing and it was great limited.
I always feel like people undervalue both the commons we both chose as our favorites because they're very innocuous, but the fact that they play so well in whatever deck they want to be in, whether it's an aggressive deck or whether it's just they need, you know, you need to stop 1/1s or something, and they all look so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because Drowsing Pteranodon's not the first green creature with that type of ability, and I can't remember the first, but we both geeked out about it. And since then, I've always been specific about finding those types of cards and realizing how good they are.
So, I don't know if it's the one you were thinking of, but the one I'm thinking of is Glade Watcher from Dragons of Tarkir. I loved, loved, loved Glade Watcher. It was one in a green for a 3/3 elemental with Defender, and you could pay a green to let it attack as though it didn't have Defender, but only if you had Formidable, which meant your creature's total power was 8 or greater. And I just loved in that format playing a couple of these on 2... and 3, and then playing a dragon, and then, you know, attacking with my 3/3s on the ground and the dragons, and yeah.
Yep.
Like I said, sucker just, for that combination.
Dave, what's your uncommon pick?
I really want to say Teferi's Tutelage, because it has all of the things that I like. It mills, it's a one-card win condition, but you can also build around it, but that's just, it's too mean for me, so I'm going to go with Conclave Mentor. Conclave Mentor was green and white for a 2/2 Centaur Cleric. And it had one of my favorite lines in Magic. If one or more +1/+1 counters would be put on a creature you control, that many +1/+1/+1 counters are put on that creature instead. And then also, randomly, when it dies, you gain life equal to its power. But this is another kind of combo card, like Drowsing Pteranodon, where you play it, and it's a 2-mana 2/2, and that's fine. And then if you put a counter on anything, it starts to go insane. I built a Selesnya Turbo Counters deck during Standard, and it was a blast. You know, I think my record was my opponent conceded when I had 34 power on the battlefield on turn 4. You know, just I love running out of dice.
6 years ago, Conclave Mentor would have been a rare.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's just a build around in common. That's wild.
What about you?
I'm going to cheat. You had two you can decide. I'm going to pick 5. I'm going to pick all the uncommon sanctums.
Okay. That's cheating, but that's reasonable. You know, you want to put them all in a deck and... you know, great throwback cycle.
Yeah, and I was a sucker for the Hondans. That's what the original Sanctums were in Kamigawa, which I should have mentioned up when we talked about them, but whatever. I'm a sucker for do-nothing enchantments. Like that's been my guilty pleasure. Some people, it's in sync. For me, it's like, I'm going to play a card where the payoff is Opalescence, right?
Right.
And yeah, I tried to play as many as I could. They were really good, and so they were taken pretty highly in draft. But just, you know, it reminded me when I was 13, and I just was agog at like the fact that there's more do nothing enchantments that tried to win the game. Like, I just loved it.
Yeah. All right. So rares for me, I really wanted to say Sublime Epiphany, because it does all the things. It's like a cryptic command, but it also just copies one of your creatures, and copying creatures is my jam.
That's your jam.
But I got to go with Terror of the Peaks. I realize it's a mythic, but you know, big dragons speak to me. Like, I loved Glorybringer. 3 red-red for a 5/4 dragon with flying. Spells that your opponents cast that target it cost an additional 3 life to cast. That's never come to play for me. But the critical text is, whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, Terror of the Peaks deals damage equal to that creature's power to any target. So I loved playing this, you know, following it up with another creature, either hitting them in the face or killing their blocker. I have played a lot of Genesis Ultimatums in Standard, and I will not take Terror of the Peaks out of those decks, no matter who tells me. I love hitting it with any other creature.
Yeah. No, it reminds me of Pandemonium. I love Pandemonium. I never actually built a deck with Pandemonium, but I thought about Pandemonium a lot back in the day. This is a red rare from Exodus, and it's basically the last block of text in Terror of the Peaks, which is a commentary on current Magic. But except it affected everyone. So whenever a creature in the battlefield, it dealt damage equals power. And so, it's a great design, and I think when they ban enough cards, it'll be one of the best cards in Standard. But, you know, currently it's the 15th best card in Standard. So. I'm going to take the card you were hesitant on. I'm going to say Sublime Epiphany. It reminds me of Cryptic Command. I did get a chance to use all five abilities on it.
Wow.
So I'm going to read them all out for listeners in case you can't remember. So Sublime Epiphany, 4 blue-blue for an instant. Choose one or more. Let's get ready for all these options. Counter a spell. Counter target activated or triggered ability. Return target non-land permanent to its owner's hand. Create a token that's a copy of target creature you control, and target player draws a card. So I did it as a response to a counter spell on someone's Uro, if I remember correctly. So they played Uro. I went to Mystical Dispute it. They went to Mystical Dispute it, and I said, ha-ha, I got you. And I Sublime Epiphanied everything. And, oh my God, it's a great feeling.
Wonderful. Yeah, great card. Probably not played well enough in Commander right now, but will be eventually. So, Corset 2021, I thought it was a pretty broad success.
I think it is going to be the highlight of the past 2 years of Magic, which sound dubious, but I really think if they did more sets like this, this reminds me a lot of how they did sets between Innistrad and Khan's Tarkir.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had powerful cards, but not something that was so overly powerful that warped it, and there was a lot of different cool cards that went in a lot of different cool decks.
Yeah, I mean, between this and Corset 2020, that's two really excellent Corset draft formats. And I have to say, aside from all the criticisms that people have had about cards being too powerful or Standard being kind of a mess, we've had really, really great draft sets. We have not had a lot of misses in the last couple years. And so Wizards deserve some kudos for that.
I'm going to be silent on this one. We talked a lot about stuff, but I have a hot take about this. I think I'm going to save it for a future episode.
All right. I look forward to beating you down on a future episode of this topic. So on to Zendikar. We'll go on to Zendikar Rising, an adventure theme. So not an Eldrazi-themed set like Rise of the Eldrazi or Battle for Zendikar or Oath of the Gatewatch. We are back to wild adventure set. Very few references to the actual Eldrazi. So generally, what can we say? Expeditions are kind of back?
It's funny because, say your favorite show of all time, or your favorite movie of all time is Scream. Just roll with me on this one here. The first one was really great. Second one, okay, it's fine. A lot of bad stuff in the middle you ignore, but then they do a reboot and you're like, ugh, that's what I remember. That's what I remember about the original Scream I love, but it's different. That's Zendikar Rising. They just essentially took out the two sets that most people in this world do not like, outside of you and like a couple of Minnesota Magic players. And they pretend that they don't exist, and they just gave you the stuff they like. But it worked. It's a good reboot. And what can I say?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. So Landfall is a critical part of the set, and that's what I think of when I think of the original Zendikar block. I mean, they basically, Akum Hellhound is just a color-shifted step links. You know, you don't have fetches this time around to go crazy with Landfall, but right. But Christian, I got to kind of call you out. They didn't totally ignore that middle block, the Battle and Oath, because Expeditions are kind of back.
Yeah, so it's kind of like in the reboot how they might be like, they might wink at you, or they like, you know, they introduce this cool thing you can't totally ignore, like Fast and Furious, like they have the guy from Tokyo Drift now, and they had to retcon it so this all happened before he died in Tokyo Drift. Major spoiler alert. You know, like, that's the type of thing they're like, oh, you like Expeditions. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, you're bringing those back. Yeah, we're good for that. But don't ever bring up the Void again or we will kill you.
Wow, you lost me the hardest. And also, Oath of the Gatewatch is sweet. I won't hear it. So speaking of interesting choices, Monocolored Hybrid Mana is back, kind of, with Tazri Beacon of Unity. They did the same thing they did, like we talked about, with Teferi, Master of Time, where they just said, hey, remember this thing we did one time? Well, we're going to put it on one mythic. So Tazri Beacon of Unity is 4 and a white for a 4/6 human warrior, legendary. It costs 1 less to cast for each creature in your party. We'll talk about that in a sec. And it has an ability that lets you look at the top 6 cards of your library, get a cleric, rogue, warrior, wizard, and or ally card from among them, put them into your hand, and then put the rest on the bottom. But it costs up to 8 generic mana, or as little as blue, black, red, green. But for each color you don't pay, basically you have to pay 2 generic mana. So you could pay like blue, black, 4 to activate the ability.
Yep.
I kind of also hesitate to say that this is back, because was it ever really here?
It kind of. So the only time this showed up previously is in Shadowmoor on six cards. Five of the six were a cycle. They're all three monocolored hybrid mana. So two and a mana, two and a mana, two and a mana. And the idea being you could pay, for example, Spectral Procession was the most played one of these. It was two and a white, two and a white, two and a white, and it just made 3/1/1 spirits. So if you weren't in white, you could cast it for six generic mana, or if you were mono white, you could cast it for 3 white mana and all the permutations in between. Some of the cycle was good. Most cycle was good. Some of it was, you know, not great. The sixth card that it showed up on was a legendary creature called Reaper King. That was Wooburg or 2 generic mana total. So you could pay up to 10 generic mana for it, or you can pay Wooburg for it and all the permutations in between. It was a legendary Scarecrow that whenever you cast a Scarecrow, you could to vindicate a permanent. So destroy target permanent. It was a 5/5, and it gave Scarecrows +1/+1.
One of my least favorite commanders to see on the other side of the table.
Because, well, here's the trick, dirty trick about Shadowmoor and Shadowmoor block in general. It was the introduction of Changelings,
mm-hmm.
and guess what? Changelings are Scarecrows.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
So anyway, it's good to see it back. It's kind of like Saffron. You definitely don't want to use it often because, man, you paid a lot of money for this stupid spice.
Yes.
But when you do use it, you do appreciate it, even
sure.
though you don't know if there's any sort of intrinsic value or anything it's really adding to the set.
That's fair. Well, allies have a new 5-color commander. That's I think, what we get out of Tazri. And then yes. the other thing which we mentioned with Tazri was Party. Party. I love Party. So Party is based on if you have at least one cleric, rogue, wizard, warrior on the battlefield. If you have all four, that's a full party. Some cards care about that. I've really enjoyed this in Limited, and I hope we see more of it in the Dungeons & Dragons themed set that is due in place of a core set next summer.
Yes, or really it's a core set that they just reskin to be Dungeons & Dragons.
Wow, but we don't just the telling the secrets, Christian. Telling lots of secrets in public.
I know, but it's cool. It really goes back to that original adventuring theme. So in Original Zendikar, it was all about Dungeons. It was actually like their own version of Dungeons & Dragons, right?
Mm-hmm.
You had traps, which were cards that had alternate spell casting costs if your opponent did something. It had adventures, which if you in quests, which if you did more of, you got a certain effect. Most famous one being Luminarch Ascension, where if you just didn't lose life, you could make angels. I don't know how that's a quest, but whatever. And it's good to get back to that, because like that's essentially what every RPG is. It's your party. It's also really clever that you can't just play a changeling and now you have a full party. It's like, no, that changeling's just one member of this party.
I've loved that. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do. I would love to see enough cards that are relevant where this could be like a cube archetype at some point, like some kind of 5-color party nonsense. So
yeah.
Here's hoping. So signature reprints, not a lot in Zendikar. I mean, a lot of draft commons, you know, nothing that's going to make a big impact. Two cards I wanted to highlight are one, Into the Royal. It's been about a year since we've had Blink of an Eye in Standard, which was the functional reprint of Into the Royal that was not Zendikar-centered and had creepy eyes all over the body and the arm. But the other one is a big womp-womp, and that's Lotus Cobra.
Yeah, so Lotus Cobra is 1 to green for a 2/1 snake, in case you haven't ran into this yet. And whenever a land enters the battlefield, you get to add 1 color of mana of your choice to your mana pool. Turns out, even though you don't have fetch lands, being able to cheat on mana is still good.
Since we just banned a bunch of cards, why not throw in another one that just lets you go ham?
So do we have any new creature types?
None that are new, but Canyon Jerboa, which is 2 and a white for a 1/2, is a mouse.
Yes.
And it's a mouse. It's the first non-token mouse we've had. So we had the...
It's the first mouse.
It's the first real mouse. We did have mouse tokens.
It's the first
mouse. Yeah. So Christian, what is the secret reach card of this set?
So not a lot of creatures reach in the set. One possible faint honorable mention to Juju Snarecaster, because it's a dumb 1/4, and yeah, it just has reach, but like when you look at the card, it doesn't scream reach. Really, it's Nissa Zendikon. Now, even you probably think, wait, Nissa Zendikon? It gives a land reach? Yes, it does.
It does. Yeah, it makes a 4/4 elemental creature with reach and haste. Not really a creature, but it makes a creature, so I'm going to say this is the secret reach card of the set, for sure. You know, I want to give an honorable mention to Ancient Greenwarden,
It's a mythic, though.
It's a mythic, but you don't expect your giant bomby mythic to have reach.
You also don't expect to play against a giant bomby mythic.
No. I'm just saying, like, if my opponent plays a 6-mana 5-7 that lets them play lands from their graveyard and doubles their landfall triggers, I'm not thinking, like, oh, yes, this elemental that's clearly just looks, you know, like it's in the middle of the forest with tall trees around it can also snag my flyers.
That's true. Yeah. I think the fact that it is mythic, it can't be the secret reach creature because it's just a secret at that point. You're just like, oh, my opponent has Ancient Reed Warden. I'm probably dead.
I see your argument. I'll just say that I agree Nissa Zendikon is definitely the secret reach card of this set.
Yes.
So, best tongue twister of this set. I have three options for you. It's been difficult to decide. The first one is Practiced Tactics.
Practice Tactics, Practice Tactics, Practice Tactics, Practice Tactics, Practice Tactics.
That was very good. How do you feel about Skyclave Cleric?
I don't want to say
it. You're going to have to.
Skyclave Cleric, Skyclave Cleric, Skyclave Cleric, Skyclave... Well, Skyclave...
All right, there we go. And the last one, Glacial Grasp.
Glacial Grasp, Glacial Grasp, Glacial Grasp, Glacial Grasp, Glacial Grasp.
Yeah, I feel like you lost
I was trying too hard on that one, though. Yeah. That's easily... Glacial Grasp, Glacial Grasp... Yeah, I can't, yeah,
no. So for me, Glacial Grasp is very hard. I want to give it to Skyclave Cleric, because even saying that once makes my mouth feel, like, dry, like I'm in junior high and I just saw a girl I liked and I don't know how to talk to her.
I think it's a tie, because Glacial Grasp is the traditional tongue twister where, like, if you really say it too fast, you're just like, but that's more of like a, your teacher called you and you were thinking about your crush and you don't know where you were in the conversation. Skyclave Cleric, though, I agree with that effect. I think it is definitely the, I saw the crush in the hallway and now I can't talk because my
mouth is dry. You're just going to say at some point, Skyclave, and that's the end of it. On to our favorite commons, uncommons, and rares. My favorite common is Skyclave Sentinel. I'm just going to over-enunciate that. That's the 3 generic mana for a 2/3 artifact creature gargoyle with kicker 4. It has flying and defender. So if I like a 2-mana 3/3 defender, you know I'm probably going to like a 3-mana 2/3 flying defender. So if you kick it, it gets 2 +1/+1 counters on it. And if it has a +1/+1 counter on it, it can attack as though it didn't have defender. So you either have a 3-mana 2/3 defender with flying, a 7-mana 4/5 flyer, or you can do the Drowsing Pteranodon thing and try to put a counter on this with other things, which, you know, is the way to go.
I do think it's slightly worse than Drowsing Pteranodon. I like this card. For the record, I really like this card too. I think, though, I have seen it more often, and the more a way I kind of play it is, if I play it at 3, I need to stop some stupid flyers, but generally I'm holding on to it to kick it. Because it's just still good as a 7-mana 4/5 flyer, you know? I mean, how tricksy have you been to try to get the +1/+1 counter on it?
Not that tricksy, but there's some incidental ways to do it, and that's kind of what I've been doing.
My favorite common is a card we've talked about, Into the Royal.
Yeah. How can you hit it? Bounce a creature, draw a card. I almost always cast this for 4-mana. Like, when I'm organizing my deck, I just put these in the 4-mana slot, because I know.
It does whatever you want it to do, and... I just can't complain.
My uncommon is Thundering Spark Mage. What can I say, man? I love a Flame Tongue Kavu. It's 3 and a red for a 2/2 human wizard. When it enters the battlefield, it deals X damage to target creature or planeswalker, where X is the number of creatures in your party. So that means one of up to each cleric, rogue, warrior, and wizard, so it can deal up to 4 damage. It's always going to deal 1. I guess unless they remove this in response to its trigger, because it's a wizard, and I have never dealt less than 2 with this card. But I really, really love the black-red party deck in this limited format. I have struggled a little bit in this format, but I've drafted black-red party twice, and I have gone 7-1 and 7-0.
It's funny because I've actually not cast this, because the only legal targets were my creatures. It's not a May.
That is correct.
It has to deal 2 damage. It has to deal damage. And when you have a full party and you're just way ahead on board, it's the only time it's awkward. It's a great card, but it's the only time where you're like, I guess I'll wait for them to play a creature and kill it and like get the great trade there. But, you know, it doesn't help if you need to have a curve. If you're like, oh, I need to beat him before he casts Omnath or something.
Right.
You know?
I did once use this on my own Malakir Blood Priest, which is 1 and a black for a 2/1 vampire cleric that when it enters, you drain your opponent. They lose X life and you gain X life for each creature in your party, so that I could blood bang it and get back and then play it to get them for the last 4 damage.
Okay.
So, you know, it does come up sometimes where you do want to kill your own creature, but it's important to know that that is not optional. What about you? What's your uncommon?
My uncommon is Thorth the Grave.
Ooh.
So Thorth the Grave is 4BB for a sorcery. It costs 1 generic less to cast for each creature in your party. So it could cost up to 4BB if you have the full party. And it just says return target creature card and up to 1 target cleric, rogue, warrior, or wizard creature from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Yeah, if you make this cheaper at all, it's incredible. Even if you don't, if you're getting 2 creatures back, it's very nice.
It's not hard for it to be 4 mana. And that's the thing I love about it. Like, I talk a lot about cards that just reward you for playing the game. And this is not up to that level. Like, you still need to play creatures that are clerics, rogues, warriors, and wizards. But there's a lot of good clerics, rogues, warriors, and wizards that are not... It's not a really a hard hoop to jump through to make this card good.
Yeah, the card's really insane in the black-red party deck, certainly. Mm-hmm. When you can get back, you know, your priest that I mentioned and drain them for some, as well as any other creature in your graveyard. Feels really good.
Yeah.
So my rare, I'm a little torn, because Sherrix the Raging Isle is a 0/17 Leviathan Crab. And that just says a lot to me. I can't, it's a 0/17, it's ridiculous. The card I can't get enough of, though, is Xerath Sand the Trickster. This is the 3BB 4/4 Legendary Merfolk Rogue. It has Flash. You can pay 2BB to return an unblocked rogue you control to its owner's hand, and then you put this from your hand into the battlefield tapped and attacking. So it's got Rogue Jitsu, certainly what I've been calling it. And then whenever Xerath Sand deals combat damage to a player, you can put a permanent card from their graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. So sometimes the way this works is they attack with something, you flash this in and eat their creature, and then you can attack back next turn. But sometimes you just attack with your, like, 1/1 flying rogue, and they let it go, and then you, like, reanimate their best thing while you dome them for 4. This card is awesome.
By the way, it's not just reanimate. It is just permanent.
It is permanent.
So there are... I was playing blue-black rogues, and I was playing Ruin Crab, because I realized it's just quicker to mill them. And there was enough games where, when I was playing this on Arena, I would Rogue Jitsu, Xerath Sand, take their Fabled Passage to get 2 landfall triggers off the Ruin Crab and call it a day.
That's nice. Yes, I have not played this in Constructed yet, but I have had it in Limited twice. And so usually it's like, oh, I milled your, you know, red 4/5 that lets me return a land to my hand and hits you for 2. All right, well, it's turn 4. I guess I'll get this 4/4 and that 4/5. Enjoy. Enjoy your game.
Right.
So it's got to be Xerath Sand for me. How about you? What's your rare or mythic?
So mine is Agadeem's Awakening.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a new mechanic in Zendikar Rising. They're modal dual-faced cards. We're about to see a year's worth of them, so we have to get used to them. On the front side, they're a spell. So Agadeem's Awakening, in this case, is the spell for this card. It's X++ for a sorcery. Return from your graveyard to the battlefield any number of target creature cards that each have a different converted mana cost X or less. So if you pay 3, you could return a creature. You can return a creature with CMC 3, return a creature with CMC 2, return a creature with CMC 1. It's a great card, great reanimator card. The back half of it, though, is Agadeem the Undercrypt, which is a land, and it as it enters the battlefield, you can pay 3 life. If you don't, enter the battlefield tap, and it adds a black mana. So it gives you a lot of great flexibility. You know, you can just, if you have multiples in your hand early and you don't need to cast it, you can play it as a land. And if you draw it late game and you really need the spell half of it, you can just cast the spell half of it. This is very subtly powerful and people are catching on pretty quickly, but it is a interesting Pandora's box of power that Wizards has opened.
Yeah, these cards are pretty out of control. I really liked playing with them in Limited, certainly, and I think they create a lot of fun in Limited, but in Constructed, it's like, if you're in like a deck that's pretty substantially black, do you just play 4 of these in every one of those decks? Feels kind of like you do.
I mean, I think for the mythics you do.
Yeah.
There's a question about how many of these spell lands you play in general. I do think some of them are so good that it's worth it. In fact, there's a new modern deck that I want to build, but I'm very far off on the cards. It's basically Oops All Spells. So this is a classic Legacy deck where it played no lands. And the whole point was there were certain cards that would allow you to mill your entire deck because it would try to search for a land and you didn't have a land. So it would just mill your entire deck and then just do shenanigans. The modern version works because you actually do play lands. They just happen to be spells in the front half.
Right. So lands on the back. So they don't count as lands. That is very devious.
Yes.
Yeah, I found the... Well, you know, one of my favorite cards is Glasspool Mimic, the rare that is a 2 and a blue on the front. It enters as a copy of a creature you control, and on the back, it's a blue land that enters the battlefield tapped. I've just put four of those in every deck I've built that has blue in it, because it feels extremely free.
The best way to put this discussion is, have we included auto-includes again for decks? I don't think we're at that point, but... You have to have a very good reason to not run these. And I don't know if Magic is better off having that as a non-decision.
They do kind of feel like auto-includes to me. So, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, you know, good set so far. We'll see where it goes. Honestly, I'm just looking forward to getting back into this groove, podcasting, hanging out, talking to listeners, chatting on Twitter. It's the jam. Before we go, since we talked about party, I got a little quiz for you.
Okay.
There are 3 cards in Magic history, not counting flip cards or transform cards, and not counting changelings, that are more than one party creature type. Do you know what any of them are? I would be shocked if you did.
Well, one's a cleric wizard.
That is correct. I will give you a hint. 2 of them are human cleric wizards.
Yes. Well, I think they're both in Onslaught.
One of them is in Onslaught.
Yes. Then the other one has to be in Time Spiral, because they wanted to throw back to it. It's like a bird cleric wizard.
No.
I played this card. No Bird Cleric Wizard?
No Bird Cleric Wizard. So the one you're thinking of is Shield Mage Elder, which is 5 and a white for 2/3 human cleric wizard from Onslaught. You can tap 2 untapped clerics you control to prevent all damage target creature would deal, or 2 untapped wizards you control to prevent all damage target spell would deal this turn. So the other one, human cleric wizard, is Wandering Mage from Alliances. It costs Esper, so it's white, blue, black, for a 0/3. Human cleric wizard. You can pay a white and 1 life. That's right. You're paying 1 life and paying white to prevent up to 2 damage to any creature. You can pay a blue to prevent 1 damage to any cleric or wizard. And you can pay black and put a -1/-1 counter on a creature you control to prevent 2 damage to a player.
Or planeswalker.
That's true. It is a planeswalker now. Sorry. This card's a rare that's on the reserved list.
Yeah, I was going to say, I had a copy of this card. I actually opened this from an Alliance pack back in the day, and I never played it because I was very confused by it.
Reasonable. So the other one, this is a card from Shadowmoor.
Oh, I wouldn't have gotten that one, but yeah.
It is not a cleric or a wizard. It is a merfolk rogue warrior. Gravel Guild Duo. It's 2 and a Dimir hybrid, so you can pay 2 blue or 2 black for a 2/1 merfolk rogue warrior. When you play a blue spell, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn, and when you play a black spell, it gains fear until end of turn. So probably not something you'd remember, but yeah, rogue and warrior on the same card. Wow, just making your party easier. Just throw a bunch of these in your blue black party deck.
Yes. You know, because that's a thing in Legacy, you know. It's just
blue black party.
Start with 4 Wandering Mage and go from there.
Well, I want to thank everybody for joining us today. It's been a long time. I hope you have enjoyed listening. I hope you want to shower us with things you want to hear for future shows. You can, as always, find us on Twitter at our handle, @MemoryJarMTG. We would love your feedback on this show. We would love to know what cards, stories, anything you want to remember.
And again, special thanks to Chris Yates for the logo. We greatly appreciate it. You can find Chris on Twitter at CMYK Company. That's company with a K. And it's been a while since I had to say that, so I said it pretty weird.
You know, and it is what it is. Sorry.
It is what it is. And until next time, hopefully it won't be many months. Hopefully we'll be playing real life Magic here. Not soon, but some point when it's safe. And hopefully you can enjoy playing this card game. Have an excellent night, day, wherever you're at.
We love you. Stay well, everybody.
Stay well, wash your hands, and wear a mask.